Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and I'm here with my brothers, Taj and Terrell, and our wonderful, wonderful friend, Miss Henry Hebert.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, everyone.
How's everyone doing?
Good.
Henry, I have to say something. We missed you.
I missed all of you last week.
We missed you.
I missed you.
Glad to be back here.
So we are live, and if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. This is show number 7.
Yes.
I got it right. Later on, we will be opening up to take a few questions via Twitter. So if you have a question about our topic, which is loss and grief, and you want to ask, then send us a tweet at DDJ Foundation. Taj is on our computer right now, ready to take those questions later on.
Oh, yeah.
And we are not licensed therapists.
Nope.
So we are just people who have experienced loss and grieving. And we're just sharing our stories and what we've learned over the many years of dealing with it to the masses. So if you think you need professional help, please go and seek it.
And our guest this week is Dr. Jeanette Raymond, and she's a psychologist and psychotherapist with a private practice in Los Angeles, California. She was born in Calcutta, India, and she was educated in Great Britain. She got a Master's of Education degree before beginning her career as a child and educational psychologist. After settling in America, Dr. Raymond obtained her PhD in clinical psychology and switched her focus to helping adults establish more secure relationships. She specializes in conflicts and fears that prevent healthy intimacy thrive in all types of relationships. She's an expert in understanding emotions, which I totally need, to help people have more stable and satisfying relationships. And she writes regularly about obstacles, how they can get in the way to developing intimacy problems. And she's also the author of Now You Want Me, Now You Don't. Is Dr. Jeanette on the line?
We're going to try to reach her.
Okay.
Interesting.
Think it's interesting?
Ring, ring. She was in a session, right?
Hello, Dr. Jeanette?
Yes?
Hello, this is Henry, and I'm
Hello?
Here. Hello, I'm here with Taj, Carol, and TJ.
And you're live right now, so we're giving you that little warning that we're on right now.
How are you?
I can barely hear you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, yeah, that's much better.
Is that much better?
I like her accent.
Yeah, that's now.
I like her accent, too. So, hello, Dr. Jeanette. You are on air, and we are ready to go.
Great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Great. So, as you know, we focus on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. And a few examples of loss can be losing a loved one, losing a beloved pet, loss of relationship, loss of income, or even loss of faith or loss of trust. But regardless of what types of loss, the emotional suffering from grief can be extremely painful. And on your website, you talk about how you believe that our emotional wounds are so painful that we often engage in self-defeating and self-destructive acts to get relief. So can our emotional wounds that we have suffered in the past from loss be unexpressed grief that is now affecting our present day and won't even realize it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when we're little, we don't have a lot of tools to express ourselves. You know, we might cry or try to get someone's attention, but a lot of the time the people around us have no idea of what's going on inside us, and they might brush it off and say, oh, it's just this, don't worry about it, or whatever, it's no big deal. And they dismiss our very intense feelings that are real and are relevant to the time. They're not over the top, but to other people they might look like that, and they dismiss it. So we kind of model ourselves on them, and we dismiss it too. The only problem is we don't get rid of it completely. It stays with us. And when we're very little, we only have one place to put it, and that's in our bodies, because that's all we know. We have a body, you know. We don't know about minds and other things, so we stuff it in our body. And it literally gets into the DNA of your cells. So when you get older and you have language and you have experience and something triggers you, you have another loss, you know, it could be a small loss, like, you know, somebody threw away a treasured toy that you had, or an object, you know, without thinking, or they broke it, and you feel that loss coming up again because there's nothing you can do, you feel out of control. It triggers the old wounds and the old losses. So we have a triple, quadruple, whatever kind of whammy. And if you think about it as a wave, you know, that just doesn't stop. It becomes intense. Mm. And we sometimes think, gosh, you know, did I overreact? That's only so-and-so, so what, you know. But it isn't just that. It's all the unprocessed, real wounds that were never acknowledged. That's number one. You have to acknowledge that it actually happened and it's real, and were attended to, were processed, were kind of digested, and then you live with it in a different way. It doesn't hurt so much. But when none of that's happened, it's kind of all compacted inside you, then these little triggers kind of poke, and it hurts because you feel all those blockages and all the unprocessed negative feelings that you don't know what to do with, and you just kind of, you kind of go into a protesting, growling feeling. You almost lose your capacity to speak.
So what do you do in that case? Like, how do you then work with somebody that has had a lot of past hurts and are overreacting and becoming triggered?
Right. Well, that's a good question, because I see it kind of almost every day in my consulting room. What I do with them is ask them, what does this remind you of? So if they're saying, I'm really angry right now because, you know, my wife promised she would come out with me tomorrow night to a business meeting, and now she's reneged. I'm furious with her. She keeps letting me down. I hate, you know, and I'm really angry, and it's hurting me because I feel betrayed. Then I say, okay, so what does this remind you of? And invariably, that person will tell me about a situation when they were a child, when they were betrayed by a parent or a aunt or a friend or a teacher or whoever it might be. And, you know, when you think about it in adult language, it doesn't seem a lot, but to that child, it was their whole world. It was everything. They were relying on that person for something that mattered a lot to them, because they were not in power. They were not in control. They had to rely on others. And so they were let down. They were betrayed. They had a feeling of abandonment, of not being important enough. And that's a grief experience, because you feel the grief of not being important enough to your loved one or to the person you're supposed to, who's supposed to care about you. And that's a sense of loss. It's a huge loss. It's bigger than any other kind of loss, because you lose your sense of self and you don't have any kind of foundation under you. So once we kind of go in the therapy session to what they can remember, all of a sudden, they'll remember a million other things that made them feel that way. And they go, ting, 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 ting. You know, all the bells go ring and say, oh, my God, that's what it reminds me of. And then they can put their present experience in context. And then we begin to unravel all those things that got buried, that never got attended to, never got attention, never got a chance to heal. And slowly, slowly, we heal all those wounds by reframing them. So they experience them as maybe at age 2 or 6 or 10 or whatever. And now in the therapy, we talk to that little child who's 2-year-old. What are you feeling? How do you want to respond when your mom says, oh, don't worry about it, it's just a cat, you know, grow up or something? What would you like to say to her? So they get to do with me in the role play what they couldn't do then. Mm. And that's the healing process of those old wounds. And then the grief goes, because there's no sense of loss. They get to recover that time, that moment, that situation, and redo it, albeit with me, but it's the healing process. And it takes a long time, but they gradually feel like they have recovered the loss. It's no longer a loss because they've stood up for themselves. They haven't lost themselves anymore. They've recovered it. They don't depend on the other one to take care of them. They're now taking care of themselves. And a lot of grief recovery is revaluing yourself and not giving all the power to everybody else to hurt you.
So if you were not attended and nurtured to as a child, and now you find yourself grown up and trying to be in a relationship or parenting children, trying to figure out how to heal yourself and how to give tools to your children that you may not even have, may not even really have because you weren't given them, like what are the particular techniques or tools that you help in terms of your clients? Is this a way you kind of reconnect them with their past as a child?
Yes, absolutely. All the time. It's always about what it reminds you of, because we all have our own personal histories, and what wounds one person doesn't wound another. So very often in adult relationships, when you tell your partner, you know, it really hurt me when I asked you if you'd, you know, what happened yesterday. I know you went to meet you. This just happened 1 hour ago. My client was saying he went to his wife and he asked her, you know, I know you went to meet with members of your family yesterday. You know, what was it like? Do you want to share it with me? I'm curious to know what happened. And he said, his wife said, well, nothing much. Was it about your mom? No. So I said, well, what did you do? Because he felt dejected. He felt wounded. And it was a loss because he wanted to connect and he wasn't able to connect. And I said, what did you do? Nothing. Just walked away. So I said, so this is something that you do on a regular basis. You don't tell your partner what you're feeling. And that's what happened when he was a kid. He was so worried about upsetting his mother if he dared to say, but mom, I need you to look at what I just did, or I'm scared that when you go on a business trip with dad, you're not going to come back. You know, I'm terrified and I'm scared. And she said, oh, just grow up and stop crying. And, you know, I've got enough on my plate. So he got used to not saying anything. And now he's doing the same thing with his wife. So he's just feeling wounded and hurt. And he's in a very, very sad because he's feeling unwanted and unimportant.
Is it as simple as just encouraging to speak out and to speak out to those that, you know, you love and to let them know how you're feeling from youth
it's
to...
It's not simple for them because they've got used to not saying it, because they, when they were growing up, if they dared to say it, they would have been told off, they would have been punished, they would have been treated in a way that it wasn't kind of worth it to them. So we might say it's really easy, but to them it isn't. They are imagining that the same punishments that they experienced as a child is now going to happen with their partner, so they don't do it. And most of what I hear is, oh, it's not worth it. She's going to get upset. She's going to get angry. She's going to punish me. She'll do this, that, and the other.
Yeah. So it's just the importance of communication is huge.
And it really is, because you're doing two things. One is you're helping your partner to understand the impact that they have on you, because they have no idea. If you don't show it, you just walk away and you can keep on doing it. They just assume that it's not hurting you, that they're not causing you sadness and grief. They have no idea and they keep doing it. So the grief and the wound gets bigger and the grief gets more complicated because it's old stuff, new stuff. It all gets mixed up. You can't unravel it. And so what I suggest to my patients is that, look, you're already in pain. So the pain of doing it can't be any worse. And what are you imagining? Does it actually happen? So kind of do a reality check. We practice it so that they begin to feel more comfortable with it. And then what happens is they can undo the old wounds by having a different experience. And what I told my patient this morning, 1 hour ago, was if you keep feeling that wound and that grief at the loss of not having someone attend to you and respond to you when you reach out to them, all you're doing is strengthening the grief circuits in your brain, that you're powerless, that you're a victim, that you just have to feel loss all the time and there's nothing you can do about it. So it's just going to get worse. Mm-hmm. And each time it happens, you're going to have an even bigger reaction. But if you choose to say, what you feel because you're not little anymore. What I normally say is, you know what, you're not, whatever their name is, let's say it's Joe. I say, you're not little Joe anymore. It was little Joe who felt powerless and helpless. But now you're big Joe. You're 37 years old. You're married. You have a family. You're a working man. You can say, it really hurt me when you brushed me off just now, when I was just trying to reach out and connect with you. I'm really interested in what happened in your family meeting. Could you do? And then when I put it that way, he had a whole different reaction because he suddenly realized that he was coming from little Joe's place and he was not accessing big Joe, who does have words, who does have authority, and who does have power. Little Joe didn't, because if he told his mother, Mom, I don't like it when you brush me off and tell me that my knee's not supposed to hurt when it does. You know, I don't like it when you do that. Then he's going to feel that his mother's going to get more angry and reject him even more, so he can't take a chance. But in his adult, Joe can. Because all he's saying is, look, I'm disappointed and I'm hurt when you brush me off. Just wanted you to know. So then he's making new neural circuits in the brain, and he's making the old grief and wound circuits reduce in their intensity, so that next time he has a new circuit to go on and he can strengthen that one. And that's the one of the ways in which you can take care of yourself now when you're feeling wounded and heal the old wounds at the same time.
And you actually mentioned that we have to mourn the loss of what we didn't get as a child. You were talking to me about that last time I was on the phone. Can you explain that and just how, you know, having the loss of not having, being good enough in terms of your parents?
Right.
Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you about, you know, several of my clients who have long-term anxiety or depression, panic issues. You know, they don't go away with medication or just, you know, cognitive therapy or whatever. What I usually find is they've come from a background where they had very emotionally negligent parents. You know, that they took care of them really well in terms of feeding them, clothing them, sending them to good schools, extracurricular activities, you know, good bedtime routines. They weren't, they had structure. They weren't necessarily, you know, doing anything untoward. They weren't hitting their kids. They weren't sexually abusing them or molesting, nothing like that. But they were absent emotionally. So, you know, one of my clients felt like, you know, her mother would just disappear and into another world and she couldn't connect with her, or she'd go into her room for days with depression and not come out, and then she'd be so angry and blame everything on my client, like it's all your fault that the house is in a mess and you've got to do this, that and the other. And then when my client needed her for nurturing and just to be there, just to kind of maybe cook together or go for a walk together, her mother was absent, her father was emotionally absent, and so on. So she's grown up, and this has happened to several of my patients. They've grown up with this wish, this fantasy, that they would have the perfect parent who was attuned to them. Oh, you're sad? Come tell me all about it. You know, comfort them. Let me know. Accept it. If they were bullied in school, you know, paying attention, not just going and, you know, telling the principal to make sure my daughter's not bullied anymore. It's actually holding them, talking to them, being emotionally available, taking them seriously as individuals. So these children grow up with a wish to have this perfect parent who would do that. And it's what I call a fantasy of rescue. So they don't grieve for the loss of what they didn't have because they're hanging on to the wish that one day it will happen. One day, if I'm good enough, if I sacrifice enough in life, if I'm a good girl, a good boy, I'm the perfect son, the perfect daughter, the perfect brother, sister, spouse, cousin, whatever, then somehow my parents will see and they will come and get down on their bended knees and beg for my forgiveness and scoop me up in their arms and give me everything I ever wanted and rescue me. So that means I cannot take care of myself. I have to wait for them. And that gets in the way of grieving for the parent they didn't have. Because in reality, if you talk to them, their intelligent self, they know their parents are not going to change. They know they've been banging their heads against a brick wall, that all their perfectionism and attempts have done nothing to help their parents be any more attuned or attentive to them. But that's an intellectualization. In their emotional selves, in their heart, they're still carrying that wish. And when I talk about mourning, they get very afraid, because to them it means they have to give up the parent in their imagination and their fantasy, which is the only good thing they ever got. Why else have I done all this work? Why else have I worked so hard to be a martyr, a slave, a perfect son, daughter? You know, it's a big investment. You mean it was all not worth it? They can't give it up. So without that, they get stuck. And it's called complicated grief. It's not irregular grief where a pet dies and you have a few days mourning and you might put a, you know, create an album and pictures and maybe get another pet and move on. Or, you know, like an elderly person that you're expecting to get ill. It's kind of like when someone dies tragically in an unexpected way, in an accident or in a shooting or in a, you know, combat or something totally unexpected, you know, brain hemorrhage or something. Mm-hmm. And you haven't prepared for it. So that, and you don't want to lose that. You can't bear to lose it because you weren't ready. So you hang on to it and hang on to it and hang on to it. I'll never forget one client I had who was married, and his wife died. She was an air stewardess, and she was traveling, and she just suddenly had a heart attack and died on the plane, and he was informed by the company that he worked for, and he never got over it. He made a shrine in his house. Whatever was in the fridge on the day she died, it was still there 10 years later when I was treating him for grief and depression. Yeah. And he left everything exactly as it was, in the hope, he had this fantasy that she would come back. And he felt guilty that maybe he hadn't loved her enough, maybe he hadn't given her everything she wanted. And he had this particular guilt that, you know, he had not wanted to have children and she did, and he thought that that was what made her die, that it was his fault. And similarly with other clients, when they haven't had the kind of care, the emotional care from their living parents, they think it's their fault that they did something wrong. They weren't good enough. They didn't match expectations. If they were a boy, they should have been a girl. If they were a girl, they should have been a boy. If they, whatever, whatever. You know, my father wanted me to be a hockey player and I was useless at it. Whatever. They always look for reasons why they failed their parents. And then they create this fantasy parent in their mind to keep that hole, because there's a big hole inside you. And they fill up that hole with the fantasy. So it's really hard for them to grieve and mourn. But until they do, we can't get down to making space and opportunity for relief and for new healthy relationships to take its place.
Is it harder if it's a sudden death? In terms of losing someone?
It is, but the worst of all is not having the kind of parent you wanted, because that's something we're all entitled to when we're born, and if you've never had it, that's the worst possible loss you could imagine.
Can you repeat that one more time? I think that was pretty strong. So basically, the importance of parenting for the kids is huge.
Yes. What I said was, we are all entitled when we are born to have emotionally attuned parents that show us and care about us emotionally. They're emotionally available. Mm-hmm. If we don't get that, it's the biggest and most profoundly disturbing loss, because you can never recover that. So that's why the children go into fantasy of this parent, this ideal. And they often pick partners who may represent that ideal, only to find, unfortunately, that they're human and they're also going to abandon you in some way, shape, or form. Mm. And that's what triggers them. So that's the worst possible loss. If you had a parent who died suddenly in a car accident, but they had been an attuned parent, an available parent, a responsive parent, you had your birthright. Then you have something to mourn, because you had it in the beginning to lose. But if you've never had it, to mourn something you've never had that was your birthright, that is the hardest thing of all. And that's what I have to work with my clients, because they're always wanting this one thing that they've never got, and they keep trying. Well, I'll do this, and I'll do that, and I'll try this, and maybe I did this wrong, and they're full of guilt and shame. And I have another client who's also a therapist, who was brought up in a home where she was the youngest child. She wasn't planned, and her mother was always busy taking care of the house, other kids. Her father, you know, got ill from time to time, and she was drawn into taking care of her dad, but she never felt wanted. She never felt good enough. Her mother never was attuned to her, and still isn't. And now she's coming to the point of having to deal with her mother actually dying. Her mother's in her late 80s. She has to have some heart surgery. They've never been close. Her mother's always been very critical and always making her feel inadequate, insufficient, you know. So no matter what she does, it's never enough. It's never good enough. It's just, you know, there's no warmth. There's no validation. There's nothing. So she tries to do that in her life outside her family, and she's ridden with guilt. And now she's coming up against... She already didn't have a mom growing up, basically, right? She was the mom to her dad. She didn't have a mom. Never was she hugged and, you know, told, tell me what's going on or what are you feeling or whatever. It was always taking care of her mother's feelings or her dad's illness or whatever. So now, not having had an actual mom in the emotional sense, she now has to deal with the imminent loss of her physical mother. And I can tell you, it's really hard. Because now she has to lose two moms, the mom she never had and the bad mom that she's about to lose, and the guilt that goes with it.
And I can say, Jeanette, as you're talking, you're also speaking to my childhood, because I had a mom that was emotionally unable to take care of my brothers and I had a father that shut down. And as you're talking and describing these things, it's literally just triggering my heart. And
yeah.
I have to say, I've been, you know, for my own self, I've been experiencing just 20 years of, you know, trying to find healing and tools, and it's really challenging and difficult. And as aware as I can become and gain tools, I still find myself, you know, it's almost like you're constantly are searching for that validation from the parent, from the nurturing that you didn't get, and you start realizing what's happening. And then you try and change the course, but it's difficult, because it's, you know, when you don't have parents that can explain to you and help you emotionally, there's things that you just don't understand in terms of healthy emotional boundaries or things like that. Or if somebody shuts down, I definitely am more apt to want to help them and forego my own feelings. And even when someone does shut down, it definitely triggers me to my own parents that shut down, and it's just painful. It's painful as a child seeing your parents emotionally going through something that you don't understand, and understanding, not at that time, but now, that you need something, and then feeling so confused as a child. So if there's someone listening now and they feel like this also resonates with them, what do you think that could possibly help them? And, you know, or if, you know, we do have some kids that do listen, if they're currently living with a parent who shuts down, you know, what should the child do? Because honestly, like, if I was a kid and I heard you, I would want to know, like, what could I do for, like, my mom and dad to help, or even help myself out of this situation, because it's painful.
Well, they're two different questions, so let me address the adult one first, you know, because like you said, you are getting triggered right now. So
completely.
If I'm talking to you and anyone else who's experiencing those triggers, here's what I would suggest. You have to start speaking to that parent from your painful place, and the best way to do it is to write it down, because there's so much research that shows that when you put your pain and sense of loss, you know, I wish this, I wish that, start from that place. I wish this could have happened. I wish when I had asked you this, I wish when we were in this place or that situation. So start from that place and write them down, and what you felt at not being able to have it. So you've got to give yourself a voice from the place of wishing and the grief place, what you experienced as a result of not having it, and how you feel when you know, and this happens all the time with people in this situation, other people are wanting to kind of make up for it, to compensate, and they want to support you or help you or, you know, just be there for you. It's not the same. And I often find that people in this situation, they reject the help that other people want to give them because the wish is for the parent to do it. Look, I know you mean well, and it's very nice of you, and I'm grateful, but you know what? It doesn't quite touch that spot.
Is it the parent, though, Jeanette? Because I always feel I have moments where I've had, where I've trusted, and all of a sudden it's not there, like the person shuts down, and then it reminds me of my parents again, and so I go into the why bother sharing how I really feel, why bother.
But that's a defense mechanism. That's a way to prevent you from trying it out and getting the same lack of response. It doesn't mean you still don't wish for it. In your fantasy, you wish that that parent would not shut down, would be available, would be attuned, would be responsive. That's the parent we're speaking to. We develop all sorts of defenses to prevent us from going back into that vulnerable place because we have to survive. But what I'm trying to share with you in my experience is that the grief process, this complicated grief that people get stuck in, it's because one part of them says, and it happens a lot in therapy, and it makes me cry sometimes because I'm giving them everything that they want, or their wife is, or their brother is, or whoever's being available to them, and they won't take it. They kind of recognize it intellectually, they accept it at some level, they're grateful, and they express that gratitude, but they won't swallow it. And it's kind of like, you know, when a child would say, I want chocolate ice cream, and mom's feeding Sheila, and I'm Joe, and I want mom to feed me. But I have Daisy who says, okay, I'll feed you. You know, mom's busy, I'll feed you. No, I want mom to do it. And they won't have the ice cream, and they'll wait for mom. That's how it is. There, I often find that these people are really well loved and taken care of by their spouses or whoever it might be in their lives that they're sharing their struggles with, but they won't let themselves swallow it because doing it means they have to accept that they didn't have that parent, and that means you have to mourn the loss, and they're not willing to do it. It takes years with some of these clients to let me in and to help them fill that gap.
Why do you think they're not willing to do it? Like, I'm trying to think of myself. I'm like, why?
You've got to give up that fantasy of that parent that you didn't have. Imagine for a moment if you allowed yourself to completely buy into the idea that your parents didn't have time for you, that they didn't give a shit about you, that they had you just because you came along and you were a nuisance to them and you were supposed to take care of them and you failed or whatever.
I feel like I'm going to throw up right now.
You can't live like that. You cannot live like that. You would die inside. You would hurt yourself. You would have suicidal ideation. You would overdose. That's what happens. You cannot do that outside of a therapeutic situation where somebody puts one spoonful of good stuff in and you take one spoonful and throw it out. That's how it has to be. It can't be all out and nothing. It's very, very, very delicate. It's very delicate because you have a template for what you want and from the person you want it. I mean, I've been working with a guy for 10 years whose mother was a nurse and completely emotionally absent, and his father was an abusive drunk. And he longed for his mother to see to him. He actually set fire to himself so she would notice. And all she said was, come over here, I'll put a bandage on. He threw himself off a tree to injure himself so she would see. No, nothing. Nothing with Dad. He just criticized. Okay. So now he's in therapy and he's talking about all his, the same feelings he's having about neglect, uncared for, unimportant, invisible, abused, verbally abused and emotionally abused. He's having all the exact same experiences with his wife. And it's taken me 9 years coming three times and now twice a week to get him to see that his wife is not doing the same thing. He's just unwilling to take in the good stuff. It's got to be exactly the way he wanted it.
It's interesting, though, because I know for me growing up having two parents that had a lot of loss and grief in their own lives that they did emotionally shut down, I found that I resorted to emotionally taking care of myself by going into the closet and literally crying in the closet. So as an adult, right. I have this side of me that that I definitely have hidden. And in the recent years, as I've been healing my own grief, I've noticed that it's, you know, that, you know, this part of me has been coming up, and it's because it's the part that I've really just pushed down. But when she does come up, and it's like she's, I feel like she's having a temper tantrum, and she's literally 3 or 4 years old, and it's a little bit surprising. Right. And if I feel safe with someone, it's amazing that I'm able to express myself, but I have to say at the same time, it's scary to have emotions and be verbally like caught at like 3 years old. It's surprising.
Right.
And then it's like how to work through that, and then how to work through that with another person who may also be like, what is going on here? This isn't how you normally react. Like, what do you do? How do you navigate that terrain?
Well, it is how you normally react, because it doesn't just happen once. It happens over and over again. And just like you're going through your stuff and coming out and protesting and then growing from that, the secret is in the other person accepting it and not taking it personally and being okay with it, because that's what your parents would have done if you had a temper tantrum. They wouldn't have just walked out on you. If they were good parents, they'd have said, okay, when you're ready, calm down, tell me all about it, we'll get, you know, we'll be okay again. So that's what it's about. It's about people giving you the opportunity to have your little experience and not take it as a breach in the relationship that's a big serious rift. You know, it's part of your growing. You have to get it out. You have to, it's kind of like I say, everything is stuck inside, like you're constipated, and little by little it's going to come out. But the problem is you don't want it to come out because it's painful and because it hurts. Imagine being constipated. When you go to the bathroom, it hurts when it comes out. It's not comfortable, and you'd rather hold it in than feel that pain. That's what's happening with these people. They'd rather hold it in because they've got used to it, and they get embarrassed by showing it because, you know, they're showing a part of themselves that's very young and out of control. But it needs to come out, because you cannot grieve otherwise. There's no room.
And then
there's
what
no
about
room.
When you're feeling like feelings of guilt added onto it? Because once you have like an emotional reaction like this, sometimes like I'll feel embarrassed or ashamed or even guilt. Like, how do you work through that then to reconnect with a person that, you know, that this happened with?
These are normal feelings, and you know, it's not the only time you feel guilt. This is part of your sense of self, that if you dare to express something you need and you dare to do it in a way that feels maybe selfish, then you're going to feel guilty and embarrassed, because that's your childhood. You can't do anything at the time but let it be and talk to yourself that this is okay. This is part of my growth. It's a developmental cycle. It's not you being, you know, a dick. And it's about explaining that, to yourself. That.
But sometimes you kind of feel like you're being an arse.
What?
Sometimes you feel like you're being mean, like it's when that comes out, and it is that you're not being so nice.
Yes, that's little you. I would say that's little Henry. It's not big Henry.
I call her stomping girl. That's what I call her, stomping girl.
Right. Yeah, that's okay. And she needs to stomp from time to time. And the more she does it, and the more she then puts it into words, because you imagine the developmental sequence. An infant would cry and hit things and throw things. A toddler would throw and bang and kick. You know, a child older on would maybe go in the closet. Someone else might run away. Someone else might break things. Someone else might call you names. But eventually we come to using words. And the research is, when you put something into words that comes from a very painful, angry, deprived place as something you're entitled to, that's the emotional center of your brain. You want to engage it with the more rational part of your brain in the front, the precortex. And so when the two act together, you're putting your emotions into words, that makes you feel normal again. that you can have a handle on it. You're not out of control. You're not just acting out. Because if you were just acting out, you'd go and take drugs or you'd do some other harmful thing to yourself, you know, alcohol, drugs, whatever, get wasted and so on. And that's even more embarrassing. But once you start putting things into words, so I do definitely recommend writing journals, writing how you feel when you have it, talking to the other person who made you feel that way, and having a dialogue with them in your mind, because then you're doing what you couldn't do before, and you're healing that part of you. You're giving yourself that opportunity that you got that was missed out on early. And yes, you might feel guilt and shame and all the rest of it, but that's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. You need to feel those things. That's how we grow.
Can you explain why a child would feel guilt? I understand them wanting attention, but can you explain the guilt?
Yes, yeah, sure. So let's take that client I told you who was the youngest child and, you know, she wasn't expected, and her dad was sick from time to time, and her mom was busy and cold. She felt guilty because she knew she wasn't wanted. She was an accident, and her parents were Catholic, so they didn't have an abortion. They went through with the pregnancy, but she wasn't wanted, and her mother didn't want her at all. So that was number one, the guilt of being in this family when you're not supposed to be. The second guilt was about being a burden on her mother, who was already busy with kids and a household and a sick father. The third issue of guilt was, I'm not doing enough to take care of my mother. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be here anyway, so now I need to pay my way. I need to prove that I have something to contribute and offer to this family. So I need to do chores and this and that and the other. And if I don't do it because I'm a kid and I want to go play or I want to be with my friends or I want to watch TV or whatever, then the guilt is enormous, enormous. So that's one aspect of guilt. Another aspect of guilt in children is when they grow up in families that are codependent. The parents make these kids feel that you're the one that needs to make me happy. I have a client now who was one of two children. He's the brother and he had one sister and he had a mom. The father left when he was two and the mother would use him as her comfort. So he became her only source of comfort. So his whole childhood was obliterated. He had to take care of her all the time. And he never knew when she needed him or when she didn't. And anytime he needed a bit of validation or attention or recognition, and he would try to get it from her, she wouldn't give it. And there were times when she just left him and abandoned him and dumped him with parents of her millionth boyfriend or whatever. And he would say, you know, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And she would say, oh, I'm coming. And he never came. So at the age of 16, he decided to leave. He couldn't take it anymore. And guess what? He married a woman exactly like his mother. But the guilt of leaving his mother was unbelievable because he was her caretaker. Can you imagine walking out on someone that you take care of who's been the source of your life? Who's been the only thing that you've ever known? The guilt is unbelievable. And of course, the same thing happened with his girlfriend. That's when he came to therapy with me. He realized that he was feeling the same trap and the same discomfort of trying to take care of his girlfriend, and he wasn't having a life of his own. So then he started having an affair to get out of it, out of the trap. And he realized he couldn't handle it, so came to therapy. And I showed him that he was feeling the same guilt about leaving this girlfriend who turned out to be exactly like his mother, depressed and needy. And, you know, I'm still helping him several months later because he's having similar issues. He's trying to get over the guilt. I mean, it took me about 9 months to help him step away from the guilt, the intensity of the guilt, so that he can feel good about himself and not feel like he's harming women and taking advantage of them by trying to have a life of his own.
Now, Doctor, we only have 1 minute or so, but we have a question from social media that we wanted to ask you. Go ahead, Taj.
The question is, what would you say to those people who have a misconception that people who seek professional help, like from a psychiatrist, are crazy?
Well, the first thing I'd say is they're actually the strongest and bravest people on this earth, because they are recognizing that they can't manage things on their own and they don't want to harm themselves anymore. They want to have a corrective experience. The people who don't do it are the ones who are not wanting to face reality and wanting to live in a way that's unhealthy and unharmful. They're not crazy. They've been treated in a very bad way, and they're coming to get healed.
That's
I love that answer.
That's great.
Yes.
It's a wonderful answer. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jeanette. It was wonderful having you, and I'm sure, I know we learned a lot, and I'm sure all our listeners did as well. So we can't thank you enough for joining us today.
We
appreciate
you. Yes. It's been my pleasure, and I'm so happy to get a chance to share the suffering of other people and how it can be alleviated.
Mm. Thank you so much. Maybe we'll have you on again.
Okay. Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, that was amazing.
Yes.
That was
incredible.
That was
really good.
I feel like it was my personal therapy session. And I'm losing my voice as I'm saying that. I obviously have to go do some writing in my journal on some of my emotions that are coming up right now.
No, that's something that she said that was really important is writing, you know, writing how you're feeling down. And that was my takeaway, was writing how you're feeling down. And if one from the past, someone that hurt you, that you may realize there may be some loss, not a strong connection. You got to write how you feel and maybe sit them down and talk
said,
with
yeah,
them.
Yeah, write a letter.
That's
write
important.
A letter.
Because I think a lot of us in society, we run away from, you know, from that issue. And I appreciated how she was encouraging us to tackle it head on.
Absolutely.
So, that's great.
So we are building a community of support on our social
yes.
media.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So last week, I did not do due diligence in terms of reading our handles. So as we only have a couple of minutes, I want to make sure that we read them. So Taj.
You make me read them? You
I'm
should be
make,
reading them.
I'm going to make
read
you
last
read
week.
Them.
Okay. Twitter, it's @DDJFoundation. Facebook, it's DEEDEEJacksonFoundation. Instagram, it's @DEEDEEJacksonFoundation. And the website is www.ddjf.org.
If you are here in Los Angeles area and are interested in working with Dr. Jeanette Raymond, you can reach her at 310-985-2491. You can also go to her website. It's www.dr.jeanetteraymond.com.
Great. And we are fundraising for our next Music Heals class for children who are suffering loss and grief to find hope and inspiration. And we hope that if you find what we are doing is helpful to you, then you will help us turn grief into positive action. A donation of any amount will make a huge impact on a child's life and empower them to grieve, grow, and heal. Thank you very much for considering this opportunity to make a difference with us. And please spread the word. The more donations and more support we have, then the more kids that we can help.
And another disclaimer, again, the four of us, Taj, Cheryl, TJ, and Henry, we are not licensed therapists. And if you feel you need help, please seek professional help. Another thing I want to say is to all of our listeners, we will be back here next Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you have any questions you want answered, please send them to us. Taj already gave you the social media handles, right, Taj?
Yes, I did.
You can visit us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter as well. Like Henry said earlier, this is a community that we are building, so we cannot thrive without your support. If you're listening to the recording of our show and want to share your questions that you've had about loss and grief or share your story, please use social media.
Thank you.
All righty. I guess that's it. Till next week. Adios.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.